You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Monday, so it's time for Shapiro World with David Shapiro from Sassman Securities. David, I was just looking at the Stock Exchange News Service announcements, and there was really nothing there. There was a four-monthly trading update from a company called Quantum Foods. But otherwise, I didn't really see anything. And, of course, it's President's Day in the United States, isn't it? So yes. I don't know if the markets are open half or what. How does it work?
No, they're closed.
Oh, are they closed? I know the futures are open. Yeah, okay. Oh, dear.
President's Day. What was it? Washington's birthday, maybe. I don't know what it used to be, I think. They changed it, but I think markets are closed. I haven't seen anything positive the whole day coming out there or discussions, just lots of interviews. But I haven't seen anything in the UK markets are up, but apart from that, no, it's a pretty dull day.
Yeah, it is. So we're going to have to try and be inventive in our chats. Let's look back to last week because I saw a couple of things that came out from you on various social platforms, so-called, and one was no water. And I find that extraordinary. I knew a restaurant that had to adapt its schedule and its practices, etc., a couple of years ago because of a lack of water or a sporadic supply. But now this is quite serious, isn't it?
I would say so. I think it's more than just, it's pretty serious. What happened, and this was actually laughable, because out of the 60-odd reservoirs in Johannesburg area, 30 were out. Half of them were out. In other words, the issues, I don't understand how water works. I know that you've got dams, and obviously it's channeled through to the cities where there must be various pump stations, you know, that have been put there for years and years that fill the reservoirs. Whatever it is, I think there was a repair done at a major station, which was pretty successful, but obviously there were problems afterwards. So you wake up in the morning and you turn your taps on and nothing comes out. And you try to work out, well, how long is this going to last? You know, because the one thing that we're used to here is this ongoing bursts, you know, pipe bursts, yes, all the time, you know, which go on for a few hours a day or something, because the one thing that our government just doesn't introduce into its lexicon is a word called maintenance. They don't know what that means. So for years and years, there's been absolutely no maintenance of infrastructure. And that's partially as, you know, even though Eskom is no longer load shedding, many of the substations continually fail because they've never been maintained. Mm. So you're literally patching them up with a bit of sticky tape and gum, whatever it is. So everything falls apart. So, yes, last week there were vast, vast tracts of suburbs that never had water. Now, water is water. You need it for your toilets. You need it to fill the kettle. You need it to bath. You know, you need it. You wake up in the morning, you want to wash your face, there's no water. You know, so I think a lot of people have introduced if you're in a home, they've got their own JoJo's, which is their own tanks, which help during these kind of periods. I continually leave one bath full of water here, you know, just in case of emergencies. Hmm. So, I mean, where else do you do that?
Well, you do that in the third world, you see. You do it in the third world if you're lucky to have a bath. Yeah.
So it's very uncomfortable, I must say. For the period that we had, we were out for almost 36 hours. So, when you're going to work, so what do? You have those, you have the little bucket that you put into the bath of water that you filled, and you go into a shower, you warm it up on the stove, and, you know, so you've got two things, and you have a sponge shower, you know, you soap yourself down and then pour water over you. So, whatever. And this was a bad one, but I mean, there's ongoing problems with burst water pipes all over the place. It's a major issue, certainly in the Johannesburg area.
That's no good. And today, of course, you've got no electricity.
Well, today we have no electricity. We were out from 6 hours. No, it's not Eskom. This is a substation failure.
This is a Johannesburg municipality mayoral leadership story, right?
Yes, totally. You know, and just the lack of maintenance over an extended period. So we have one called CYDNA. I don't know what that counts, what it stands for, but there's not a week that goes by that the Sydney station doesn't trip for whatever reason. When they trip, you've got to go call out people, electricians, whoever comes there, and it's not a 1 hour. You know, these are normally 3, 4, 5, 6 hour. Where you're without electricity, you know.
Yeah, but David, you know what? You're stubborn. You know, I sit here listening to you, and I think you've got the means. I mean, and don't say you haven't. And you know, you're not a boastful person, but you've been careful over the decades, and you've been successful over the decades. And you're not exactly a man of straw. And yet, you don't move to Cape Town, and you don't move to America or Australia, wherever it is, where you could. You're just stubborn. And you know what it is? You've been numbed into submission. You get used to it, and it's. I'm sorry, I've got no sympathy for you.
No, I know what you mean. I don't think immigration at my age is that easy. I enjoy traveling, and I must say that I'm off on the end of March, and I've gone for another 6 weeks to America to see my daughter, my grandchildren. And, you know, it's. I was just talking to Linda, my wife, last night, and I said, people don't realize, and you've heard it, you've said it to me when you've spoken to me, when you get into an you know, when you get into America or Australia, you just for the first time understand or what the lifting of tension is like. You know, the lifting of you just feel a lot freer.
Yes.
You don't feel that people are watching you, trying to steal from you all the time. And I must say, I'm much more relaxed there than I am here. I'm not unhappy here. I mean, I've got my work to do. Where I'm a known figure, and that helps a lot. You know, yes. But I must say, from a living standard, you know, despite the fact that it's a lot harder there and a lot more expensive, you do feel the freedom. And I don't know what price that freedom, you know, what price you can put on that freedom.
It just seems to me it's a waste of years, you know. I mean, okay, you're advanced in years, but you're incredibly healthy, and you've got at least another 15, 20, I would have thought, to go, maybe even more, knowing you. You won't stop irritating people for a long time yet. But, but seriously, it's a waste, David. You shouldn't have to be waking up in the morning.
So I've got children on three continents. So it's not that I'm without family here. And, you know, those are big draws. I've got my son, I've got three young grandchildren here. So you've got to split that, you know, you've got to try and cover all the bases while still trying to hold down a job or have a job. So, yeah.
And Cape Town has never been an attraction to you. No.
I'm not a Cape Townian. I'm not a Cape Town person. I don't like to grow my hair and wear sandals. You know,
for goodness sake, I can't believe you just said that. I mean, you're a runner. You could go somewhere and have beautiful runs through forests and beaches and things like that on the mountain. Anyway, you've irritated me now. David, this, as we said it earlier on, there's really nothing much going on. Did you read anything?
There was something important. Yeah. No, there was an important announcement today, Lindsay, which is quite, you know, quite relevant, and in a way a bit sad. It's the demerging of Anglo Platts. You know, they came out with their numbers, their results. Yeah. There's nothing in it, and the markets barely responded. I think most of it was already known.
We knew it, didn't we?
Yes. So what's interesting is that they're paying out, which we didn't know, like a 59 Rand dividend from Anglo Platts all the way up to Anglo American. So Anglo American will get about 11 billion Rand because it owns 69% of Anglo Platts.
Yeah.
And in June, it will be demerged. And there's so much in the story because, you know, Anglo American was synonymous with South Africa, with the South African economy.
Yes.
And slowly over the years, it's got smaller and smaller, and it's now, it sold off its gold, you know, Anglo gold mines. Well, the gold mines were was basically defunct, finished, is now selling off its platinum interest. So it'll have its the diamond interests are no longer worth what they were. There's a lot of problems in the diamond industry. So here you have what was a giant of South Africa economy just shrinking in size all the time. And just, yes, it's got some very good assets around the world, but it's from the time that it went overseas in 2000, you know, it shifted its primary listing to the UK, which is about over 20 years ago. It's really been a diminishing company.
So what will it be now then? What will Anglo American Platinum be now?
Oh, Anglo Platts will be local. It will be a platinum company, you know, but on its own.
Yes.
It hasn't got its parent anymore. It's independent business there with its own balance sheet, like Anglo Gold was. And it's a fully South African company because this is where its mines are. So nothing, you know, and it's, I looked at this cash reserves. It's got plenty of cash. It's got very little debt. So even though its profits are down, it's fairly well run. You know, it's the reason for the falling profits are more to do with falling platinum price and the rand rather than anything dramatic and just the general state of the market. But it's been okay, you know, it's run okay.
You write a regular article for a local publication. Maybe it's a time to have a look at Anglo American and sort of track it, a history lesson and where it is now and where it might be going.
Yeah.
Because it embodies South African business and the South African economy, doesn't it?
Yes, and that's what I'm saying. That's the story. You know, that's what's come to. From my point of view, I mean, Anglo's was number one, by far the largest business, and at a time where you couldn't get money out, you know, it had its tentacles out and owned virtually everything from banks. You know, I think it owned Barclays. Yeah, it was. You know, they owned Barclays. They owned industrial interests and powerful industrial interests. A lot of them aligned to the mining industry.
Wasn't there a company called Score Metals or something?
Yes, Score Metals.
I remember seeing that when you drive along on your way to Durban, on your way back from Durban. Yeah, we Score, and I thought that's Anglo American PLC.
SCAW. Yeah, that's SCAW. Yeah. Yeah, no, and how it had plenty of other businesses as well. You know, associated with the mining industry. But today it's, you know, even if you go back to 94, 30 odd years ago and look at the size of it and where it is today, it's a, you know, it's no longer the biggest company. I'm just trying to look here as we talk. If you look at the Anglo-American, it's down at a market cap of 760 billion versus BHP of 2.4 trillion. Rand. So,
crikey.
You know, these were always viable. I mean, you know, from the old days of General Mining, which became Billiton, which merged into the BHP group, it's a third of the size, even less. Even Glencore is now much bigger than Anglo-American. So the Rio Tintos of this world are far bigger. They're far bigger mining houses than the mighty Anglo.
And tell me, David, what was the name of the headquarters, the famous headquarters in central Johannesburg? What was the address there?
44 Main Street.
44 yeah. Main Street. And what is that now? Yeah. That's no. Is
it's
it
a university. Really? It was donated. It was really, I think, in a way, donated to one of these universities. A very good concept, but I don't know enough about it to explain. But I think the surrounding areas, because not only did they have 44 Main Street, I think they had adjoining buildings as well. Mm. You know, in those days, and I've said it, when we used to have to take our shoes off and kind of crawl into the entrance. That's how powerful they were. You know, when you were, this was holy ground in Johannesburg, certainly in that part of the world where they were. You know, this was the old stock exchange in Hollard Street. So, I mean, it was, and Lindsay, in the early, you know, when South Africa was the mining capital of the world or the resource capital of the world, those gold mines were enormously powerful. They opened up, Anglo-American opened up the Orange Free State mines. There were some big mines that they owned there. And in fact, the tax revenues allowed the apartheid government to continue if it wasn't for those huge revenues that they made, you know, without Anglo, I don't want to say with Anglo's help, because they were never, they always opposed the government. But I mean, you're operating in South Africa. It still gave them enough economic force to continue with the apartheid policies. But I mean, South Africa was a very powerful little country in those days, simply because of the very, you know, of the mining companies, De Beers as well. De Beers, you know, it's controlled the diamond industry through a cartel, through the Central Selling Organization. And so that's why I'm saying, from a nostalgic point of view, when I look and see what's happened to Anglo's, yeah, it's sad.
Yeah, it is. I suppose if you look back, you'll say to yourself, okay, it was gold mainly, gold and diamonds that started Anglo-American's path to greatness.
Yes.
And then in 1970, I think it was, they produced 1,100 tons of gold, which was unbelievable. Yes. Yes. 1,100 tons. And from then on, production declined. And I suppose if you're a simpleton like myself, you'd say that was when the South African economy probably peaked, the apartheid South African economy probably peaked, and Anglo-American peaked as well, because it's been downhill ever since in varying degrees. And then De Beers delisting, I never forget that. I was working with the late Guy Wolford. You probably remember him.
I remember him, sure.
Yeah, and he was distraught when they delisted. I mean, this was a huge thing, because people had grown up. You know, you wake up in the morning, look at the newspaper in those days and say, well, De Beers closed here and the various gold mines closed there. But no, it all fell apart.
No, you're dead right. I remember my dad saying to me, they used to deal in gold shares, and it was a wonderful area, because the whole world wanted gold shares. So, you know, gold shares were listed in Zurich, Paris, London. You know, there were secondary or ADR listings, New York. And most of our business was dealing in gold shares with counterparts in those areas. And, of course, there was always arbitrage. But I always remember when I first joined the market in the 70s, my dad, you know, I stood with him on the floor. We were in the seventh floor of Hollard, of a stock exchange building in Hollard Street.
So you went from Hollard Street to Diagonal Street, yeah?
Hollard to Diagonal, yeah.
Okay.
And in 1978, so this was 72. And I remember looking at the board, and he said to me, he says, you know, by the turn of the century, it was like in 28, 30 years' time, he said, none of these mines would be here. And he was right, you know. And I was horrified at the statement. You know, I just said, how can you say that? And it was the truth, you know. All those mines were eventually mined out. And with it, South Africa never made an alternative plan. You know, we never thought that this would actually happen. And you can see it throughout history. And certainly even the new government, you know, when they took over in 94, just believed that the commodity cycles would just continue indefinitely.
Mm. It's like Saudi Arabia. I mean, they made a decision many, many years ago to diversify, use their oil revenues and diversify into other things. And they've been successful. I think they've been relatively successful doing so. But South Africa obviously didn't think that, which is sad. And just on when you're standing on the floor with your late father, 1972, Looking up there, staring at a board which was packed with gold shares, he gave you your first order in a share called Lorraine, David.
No, that's my best story. It was actually a year or two earlier, when I was working during holidays and that, and Lindsay, I can't explain the kind of business we used to do overseas. You know, we had huge contacts in the UK. Because it was a very vibrant market. Gold, you know, we dealt in gold shares, not in gold.
Yes.
The gold shares were very, I mean, they were powerful businesses, because they generated huge amounts of cash, even though they were wasting businesses, and they paid massive dividends. But they were always attractive to, you know, to foreign investors. And I remember it was Williams de Bro. We used to have a telex room, because we communicated via telex.
Yes.
And we would receive a telex direct to Williams de Bro, and they came back and they wanted to buy 1,000 Lorraine at 40 cents. Now, listen, I promise you, I'm not joking. Now, that order is indelibly linked, I mean, etched into my brain. 1,000 at 40 cents. How much is that? That's 400
rand. 400 rand.
Okay. Yeah. So those are the orders we dealt in. But, I mean, it was a decent order. And it came over the mic, and I picked up, and instead of 1,000, I wrote 10,000. So I gave it to my dad, who was a gold trader. He was very well known. And anyway, he bought, you know, he bought the 10,000.
For 4,000 rand.
For 4,000 rand. We reported it back to Salome. I still remember the lady who was the telex operator. And she came back to me and she said, no, it should be only 1,000. Anyway, I had to go to my dad, whom I admired and loved. And he was a very stern person at home, never swore. If we were ever rude, he would. And he called, he looked at it and he started. And I was doing my, I was doing my BCom at that stage, and I was a university student. And he just let rip at me. He called the whole floor over because they loved this kind of thing. And he used every four letter word that had ever been invented.
Really?
Oh, just shouting at me in front, because there was a chap, Manny, God, what was his name? Manny, I can't remember his surname, but anyway, he came and, you know, he canceled the order, and he said, it's okay, I'll take 1,000. And, you know, we canceled the order, or just reversed the order. Anyway, my dad let me have it, you know, and he just called me every name, and I says, you're a bloody BCom student, you know, you're a la la la, etc. But the whole floor loved it because they were, they enjoyed this kind of thing. They said, Davey boy, Davey boy, you know, shouting at me.
You were a legend from that day onwards.
They never forgot the 1,000, Lorraine.
anyway, things have changed.
So that was, but that was how, that's how we traded. And I mean, why I say that and why I always bring up the story was the kind of businesses that we did used to do. And Lindsay, the sad thing is today, the JSE hardly exists. We can't make a living relying on South African trade only. You know, I think that's, you know, that's the end. That's kind of where we are today. The market is, it's very, very difficult to, and you can see it everywhere. I know we're going on with this conversation, but we see it everywhere in the newspapers and everything, you know, the financial press is slowing down to a point where it's very difficult to get interest. Look how many companies from overseas have left the country, or research houses, you know, are no longer here. So it's indicative of where we are as an economy. And that's why this Anglo story kind of not hurts me. It's just, it's sad.
It is. Talking about sad, let's move on to overseas, because it's President's Day, and the current president used to be the 45th, now he's the 47th president. He's a hypocrite, David. There's a lot of things that I call him privately, and not so privately sometimes, and I get into trouble for it, but he's a hypocrite. What he said was, to when he made a speech about Europe and NATO, he says, you're not paying enough. We have to pay this amount, and you are paying this amount. We pay 350 billion, you pay 200 billion, and yet we've got this huge ocean between us, between us and Ukraine and Europe, and yet we're supposed to pay 350. You're more at risk than we are, so you should pay more than us, or the same as us, at least, okay? And okay, so fair enough. But then he says, when it comes to negotiating a peace deal for Ukraine with Russia, he says, oh no, you can't be part of that. What do you mean you can't be part of that? Europe is right next to Ukraine. Ukraine is part of Europe, and you're saying we can't do it. You can't have it both ways. He just blurts things out.
I know. I think, again, what concerns me, Lindsay, is that, you know, you asked me what I'm reading over the weekend, and the more I read, the more concerned I am about where we are, because I think his actions are just, what's the word, neutralizing or nullifying business people, because no one wants to do anything because they're not quite sure what's going to come out the next day and where they stand. And it doesn't matter whether you're in Australia, whether you're in India, whether you, wherever you are, no one wants to do anything, just not knowing what trade with America is going to be like and what's going to happen to the world. There have been a lot of, you know, after communism, I mean, at that, when communism fell in the 1890, of course, a trade opened up, And it opened up where you were doing deals with China. You know, as China grew, people were starting to extend all their contacts, you know, and supply chain started to expand. If you were building something in America, you'd find parts, the best parts from all over the world. Now, all of that is reversing from COVID, then from Ukraine and the Cold War, and now from Trump. Mm. You know, everything's gone backwards. So you don't know where you are. No wonder Powell can't understand what's happening to inflation and what's happening in the world. No one knows. You know, we're in a position we don't know.
What worries me is the admiration that Trump has for Putin. He likes dictators. We know that. He admires someone that can get up in the morning and not have any opposition. So, I mean, I would love to be in a press conference with Putin and say, excuse me, do you agree with someone who eliminates the opposition? If there's a viable opposition leader in Russia, he or she would get put in jail and ultimately killed, or they get pushed off a balcony before they get put in jail. Like Navalny, for example, poor man. It's a 2-year anniversary of his murder, or 1 year. Yeah. Anyway, and Putin wants to be Peter the Great. He wants to expand the Russian Empire. That's why he invaded Ukraine. And he would definitely go, if Ukraine fell, he would definitely move on to other countries. He's already got Belarus on his side and everything. But Trump, in a way, is saying, well, if Putin can do it, and if he gets away with it, with Ukraine, then I can do it. I can make Canada the 51st province of the United States. Yeah. I can buy Greenland. I can take back the Panama Canal or claim the Panama Canal. That's colonialism, David.
Okay, no doubt. And what you're saying about the association with Putin, you know, as you say, no one dares criticize Putin. Trump's going that way as well, you know. First of all, within his party, no one criticizes him. Yeah. Otherwise, you're out. And I think he's doing that now with the states, with the individual states. You know, you want help from the federal government? Well, then you've got to listen to us. You know, they want to control everything, and that's his attitude. So people are dead scared to stand up against him. And yes, I know you've got Democrats and that at the moment no one's more powerful, but there's no lobby against him at all. Mm. So that's Putin. That's what Xi, the same thing. And the problem is that when there's no criticism, that's where you get inefficiencies creeping in. It's a big concern to me as well. You know, no one dares to challenge him.
As for Musk, well, I don't know what on earth is going on there. He has a meeting with the Prime Minister of the world's most populous nation, Narendra Modi, and he takes three of his 12 children there and sits there and they run around in the White House. It's outrageous behavior, and no one says anything. He's one of the strangest men I've ever had the misfortune to see on television. I interviewed his father once, and privately asked him about him. He said, "Oh, you don't want to know what he was like and what the family was like." But it's another story.
That's so funny.
Mm, David, we don't need to talk about the markets. The JSE's down a bit, isn't it? The S&P futures are open, but the real market's not going to open, as you said. So we should just move on to football. Well done, Arsenal. Well done, Arteta. I'm highly critical of him sometimes, but he brought on Mourinho towards the end, Mourinho. He did well, yeah. And it's not easy to go to a team like Leicester who are fighting relegation, and they won it in the last 10 minutes. So hats off to them.
It worries me what lies ahead. I really am concerned because you've got a youngster of 17. You don't want to put too much pressure on him. They're building him up now as a future superstar, and he showed some great talent. Look, there are kids in the rest of the world. There was the Messi, Jamal.
Yes, youngster.
Yeah. But, the reason that Arsenal have lost four of their forwards and hamstrings is they're just too stretched. Mm. You know, they were just, especially Saka, they were just using, every game he was playing, your body can't stand up to that. So I'm very concerned. They're still in the Champions League. They're still fighting for the league, which I don't think they'll get. I wasn't impressed with Liverpool yesterday. They looked awful.
Yeah.
They looked absolutely awful and all
tired
over the place.
To me. Yeah.
And if Wolves could have had some decent players there, and they could have taken the game, but they were also all over the place. But when I looked at Liverpool, yeah, they were tired. Worst of all was the Man United Spurs game.
It was one of the worst games, I think, of the Premiership season.
I know.
It was like Sunday morning kickabout on Hackney Marshes. It was terrible.
They were shocking. That the fact that they're 14 and 15, wherever they are, you'd think it's not, it's not through bad luck. It's that they deserve to be there. And they were awful. I think some of the Notts Forest, even one has to give credit to your team, who just held up.
They
under
fought
the most
and fought and fought. It was as good as a win, that draw. To me, they were sensational, I thought.
I know. They were it's stupid to get a sending off. I mean, sometimes I always wonder why some of these defenders or players, just knowing that they're on a yellow card, even though it was an undeserved first yellow card, that you've got to kind of push a chap knowing that it's in a very vulnerable position, knowing that it's going to get you sent off anyway. Mm. And you let down, especially Ipswich, where they are at the moment. They need whatever they can get.
Yeah.
Anyway, but that's sometimes you just shake your head because I'm glad they got a point.
But, the only reason they got a point, just getting technical now, is because they signed a goalkeeper, because the two goalkeepers they have at the moment are disastrous. There's a nutjob Berkosovan they've got called Arrow Muric. He's completely mad. So they had to get rid of him. And this new fellow, Alex Palmer from West Brom, gosh, he was good. He was man of the match. And but I got encouraged by that. That's two games without defeat now, so it's okay. I'm sure we'll scrape through, David. Champions League this week, and then I don't know when Arsenal and the automatic qualifiers start playing again, but it must be the end of the month or March or something. When is it?
Well, they'll start in the next, I think, 3 weeks, three weeks. As soon as the qualifiers are over this week, I think. Then they'll start. Yeah, maybe a week's break or something, and then we start.
Very good.
And I don't know when the draw is, but I'm a bit wary of that. They can put Marino. I always thought maybe they could put Miles Kelly from left back, making him into a winger. So they've got some good youngsters, but this tough opposition. Hey? Yeah. Mm.
All right, David, thank you very much for your time, as always, on a Monday. That was a Shapiro World with David Shapiro, who is from Sasserin Security and is in a waterless and electricity-free Johannesburg. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position or opinion of any other agency, organisation, employer or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.